Hello, this is Ken McLeod. Thousands of people around the world listen to these podcasts every week, just as you are doing now. If you find them helpful, please make a donation at unfetteredmind.org/donate. Your generosity helps us maintain and expand the website for the benefit of yourself and other practitioners worldwide. Thank you, and enjoy this podcast.
Unfettered Mind. Understanding form is emptiness.
All right. Okay. This afternoon, form is emptiness. Emptiness is form. Emptiness is not other than form. Form is not other than emptiness. These are very famous lines. In the original Sanskrit version of the Heart Sutra, there were actually six lines, because they wanted to cover all the logical possibilities. But these four have echoed down the corridors of time quite happily. Whoever came up with these lines was a genius. And they're worth considering very carefully, because in these four lines we also find the secret of how to read sutras. Now, somebody asked me about the Diamond Cutter Sutra this morning. The Diamond Sutra has, I think, 32 chapters, maybe 33, I can't remember. And I think it's the Bhuti and Buddha go back and forth. But when you read this, it sounds like Subhuti is asking the same question over and over again, and Buddha's giving the same answer over and over again. Edward Conze, who is one of the great scholars of the Perfection of Wisdom Sutras in the 20th century, said that after chapter 8 of the Diamond Sutra, it was all pointless repetition until 24 or 26 or something like that, when the Buddha started to say something again. He didn't know how to read sutras. It's very important to know how to do things. The Heart Sutra starts with an invocation. I bow to Lady Perfection of Wisdom. Some worship a golden goddess with four arms, a book, and a rosary, expecting, perhaps, to be freed from pain. Some worship a collection of sacred tomes full of subtle concepts and subtler logic, confident, perhaps, in the power of reason. Some worship bliss, clarity, emptiness, or other altered states, convinced, perhaps, that there is something to gain. Apparently, no one told them how to bow. "Who sings?" asked a jazz singer. One night she disappeared from the nightclub stage, but the song continued, and the audience loved it. Apparently, she knew how to bow. This is the experience of one of my students, who was a jazz singer. And she said, "What do I do in my practice?" I said, "Ask who sings." A few months later, I got this phone call. And the reply was, "No one." And she had this experience. Her husband plays guitar. He's one of the top jazz guitarists in L.A. And just in the middle of her set, she completely disappeared. And there was just the song. The sutras are not intellectual or scholastic texts. As I said this morning, they're a record of an interaction between a teacher and a student. If you think they follow the rules of logic, you will miss the point. There is a sequence, and the sequence is extremely important. And many people over the centuries have written commentaries, seeking to interpret that sequence in terms of logic. This is really like cooking a skeleton and hoping that you'll eat some meat. So I want to go through these four lines from an experiential point of view. And when you read sutras, don't seek to understand them. Stay in touch with precisely what they are eliciting in terms of experience in you. Form is emptiness. What happens when you hear that? What happens in you? Yes, please, microphone.
I'm going to break the rule. What do we mean by form here?
Form in this context means everything we experience through our senses.
Okay.
And the experiencing and the experiencing of it.
Okay, I was having a lot of anxiety about that. What do we mean by form?
Okay.
But now I'm not.
So, I'm sorry you didn't break the rules.
Logical there. I want to know what your term.
Well, you asked for clarification. That's not a problem. Okay. So, form is emptiness. Yes.
Like everything opens into an open, silent space.
Okay. Anybody else? Yeah, either.
I feel like everything's a lie then.
Everything's a lie.
Lie.
Mm-hmm. A lie.
Mistruth.
Yes, they've been lying to me for a long, long time. Okay.
I feel a sense of exhilaration.
Okay. Back here.
I feel a sense of relief.
So, excitement, exhilaration, relief, feeling I've been lied to. What's going on here?
Pardon?
A feeling of completeness.
A feeling of completeness. Okay. Well, let's put this in real terms. Look around this room. See the walls, the paintings, the people. All of this is form. Avalokiteshvara says, form is emptiness. So when you say that line and look at everything, what happens? Yes. Pardon?
Let go.
What do you let go of?
Let go.
Well, you're looking at the actual paintings, but I'm talking about the people and the walls and the lights and the air conditioning and but what happens in you? Let's hear from some other people. Okay. Hand the mic around.
When I hear that line, the first thing I start thinking about, well, what do these words mean? So we talked about form, but emptiness just as much. So my mind immediately goes to what I've read, which is we're talking about empty of self. That's what happens to me when I hear that line. I think
you start thinking.
Because the words form is emptiness by themselves don't mean much to me. Except the association, because they're part of the sutra.
Okay. And so you start thinking, like, what does this mean?
Translating, yeah.
Yeah. Anybody else?
Well, I think of the chair and the table analogies. You know, at what point, when you start taking things apart, do they cease being what they are? And
okay.
So when you bring them down to their nothing, at what point is a chair not a chair? When you start taking it apart, what point?
When it has three legs or
person, not
two
a person,
legs
if you took them apart. And so to me, that's what form is emptiness means.
Okay.
There's no there.
All right. So here and then Laura after Sophie.
You know, whenever I've read those lines, I've always felt like it was a contradiction to make me totally confused.
Okay,
because to me, form is not, emptiness would be an absence of form.
Right.
So whenever I read that, I always think, you know, is this a trick?
Yeah, okay, so you're feeling tricked, confused, and deceived. Okay. Laura.
A variation on that, I feel puzzled and curious, sort of stopped in my tracks.
And you're right, that's a variation on that, yeah.
The first time I heard the words, I came to tears. And so that experience remains to some way that it suggests that there is a mystery and a profundity beyond anything that I have understood to this point, and I'm willing to stay open to that.
Okay. Well, let's take a look at this line. One way of understanding this, it's saying things are not what they seem. Now, whether you do it with a table or a chair or a chariot, which is a very traditional thing, a glass, a cup, things seem solid. Book seems solid. But we have to be careful here, because Buddhism is not talking about the world of things. have two worlds. It's experience. You can read it. The world I think I experience and the world I actually experience. The world of objects, careers, family, responsibilities. Is this the world I actually experience, the world I think I experience? How many vote for think? How many vote for actual? If you think that's practicing the middle way, think again. Sensations, thoughts, and feelings I talked about earlier. Are they the world that you actually experience, the world you think you experience?
It's closer to actual.
Yeah. In the world that we actually experience, there are only three things. Sensations, thoughts, and feelings. That's it. There isn't any drum. There isn't any bell. There isn't any paper. There isn't any paper. There's white. Rectangle. Seeing. This is what the Savastivadins were getting at with their dharmas. The world that we think we experience is a shorthand which we use to communicate. But there's a very interesting difference between these two worlds. I know this is California. Let me talk about sharing experience, right? So, anybody have a good lunch today?
Yeah.
What'd you have for lunch? Falafel. I'm not going to ask you to share that experience. I hate falafel. Anybody else have it? What? Yeah, I'm not interested in talking to you. Who had a good lunch?
Salad.
Oh, very nice. What kind of salad?
Greens and tomato and avocado and
walnut. That sounds good. What kind of dressing? Oh, excellent. Did you enjoy it? Okay. Could you share that experience with me, please? Are you being selfish? Why do you say, I don't think so? Well, can you recall it? Well, do you have a memory of it? And when you have that memory, can you sort of feel the textures and the tastes and all of that?
Yeah.
Could you share that experience with me?
I could try.
Please. I mean, I had a salad, but I didn't have that salad, so I didn't have the walnuts.
Do you like words about my...
No, I want to share the experience. I'm not interested in words. I want the experience. How would you do that? Oh, so now we're going to eat out of the same salad. It's getting a little intimate, but we'll go with it.
Out of the same large salad.
Yeah, okay, fine. I mean, two separate plates here, you know. We're not cohabiting yet. But I want to, when I eat that salad, I will have an experience and you're going to have an experience. I want to share your experience. I know my experience, but I want to share yours. Well, so are you going to share it or not?
If I could, I would.
What do you mean, if you could?
My experience is going to be a different experience. My experience, you won't be able to experience the same thing.
I can't experience your experience?
No.
You can't share your experience?
No.
Is this because you're being selfish?
No.
Well, I don't understand. How did this phrase, share experience, come about if you can't share experience? I mean, I moved to California because I heard that everybody shared experience. And now you're telling me that this was a... I was lied to.
Yeah.
Is that right? Oh. So, in this world, there's no possibility of sharing experience?
No.
Wow. Okay, forget about sharing. How about, can I buy it?
No matter what you pay, you will not experience what I experience.
Wow. So no buying, no trading, no exchange, no sharing, none of that stuff. It's interesting, isn't it? In this world, there is no form of exchange possible. Your experience is your experience, and that's it. In this world, we buy and trade and exchange all over the place. But in this world, it's not possible at all. This is the world that Buddhism is talking about. And that's often not understood. Anybody? I mean, having experience and emptiness, that's okay, you know, we can sort of play with that. But experience and emptiness, they're really not different. How does that feel? Anybody? Yes?
Well, it seems kind of expansive if you're going from this sense of emptiness is really all this pointless.
Could you hand the microphone, please? Yeah. Please say that again.
It seems kind of expansive. It seems kind of expansive in the, if you're going from this sense that emptiness is really all this fullness, well, all right, I don't know. Now I forgot what I was going to, is it on?
Yes.
That then you have this sense of, like, if experience is related, whatever you said, to emptiness, that it's huge and it's also chaotic and full and it's really pretty exciting.
Okay, so it opens up possibilities.
Yes,
yeah, okay, right. Anybody else? All the way up here.
Feels like another nail in the coffin.
Yours or mine?
Fine.
Oh, that's fine. I don't worry about that. Say more.
Well, you know, the emptiness is form. Oh, well, form is emptiness, pulls the rug out of, for me, the solidity that I assign to my experience of things.
Okay.
And then emptiness is form. What does that do for me? It allows me to relax in what it is I am experiencing. And then when it says form is no other than emptiness,
actually it's emptiness is no other than form. Oh, same diff.
Okay. All right. If ever I thought there was an alternative that I was going to escape from this whole conversation, it's no. There's no escape. It's sort of taking my head. I feel that hand taking my head and going there, and then I get that. No. There, you know.
So it's pointing you very, very precisely.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, big fullness, many possibilities, pointing right at it. Anybody else?
So it took me a long time to sort of get to the point where I could actually say that it was a bit of a relief, you know, thinking about it at all. Because in the beginning, very honestly, it was absolutely terrifying. When I first encountered this emptiness form is emptiness, I just thought, what? You know, it undid me completely. It was just like the, you know, Zen koan that stops you dead in your tracks and you don't even know how to think at all. And then it was really rather terrifying. Actually, and I mean, I worked with it for a very long time, and I went, because I had a tendency of fear and anxiety about my world in general, I went to this completely nihilistic space where my world became undone for me completely whenever I tried to think about emptiness.
Okay.
I really went down to a terrifying space where the world dissolved, and I couldn't have a sense of matter at all, myself or the validity of anything else. And it became a very painful space. It's taken a very long time where I have now gotten to the point where the possibility of that word emptiness really bothers me. I don't know, there has to be a different word translation for the word shunyata than emptiness, because the word implying less than something it was where I went. And as I said, I had the tendency to fall into nihilism, and it was very frightening, and I got very depressed and really freaked out. And it took a very long time to come up to a warmer space where I just threw the word emptiness out altogether to the point of the possibilities of it being something else other than what I thought it was.
Okay.
And that was very meaningful for me, and I only wanted to share that because I know that he didn't come today. There was a friend of mine who was going to come to this who went way down into that fairly recently. And I told him it was a long process, but it was worth working with because it's like one of those practitioners' downfalls that happens to some people, depending on the type of your mind, and that, you know, you can get to this possibility where the fullness, that it has these incredible possibilities, that it wasn't meaning what my interpretation of the word emptiness meant at all. And then I felt like I was, you know, all these possibilities came up, and it was really very, you know, I feel like I can work with something, and I got more stable.
Okay, thank you. So, emptiness is form, or emptiness is not other than form. We have these two opposites, seeming opposites, emptiness and experience. And a lot of people take issue with the word emptiness. It's actually the right translation in both Sanskrit and Tibetan. The Tibetan is tongpa nyi. If you have an empty box, you say gom tongpa re. And same in Sanskrit. I don't know Sanskrit, but the it's wonderful. Whoever came up with the word was also a genius. I like him or her, whoever it was. And it teaches, in a strange way, the value of nothing. Nothing is what makes everything possible. You know, you can't fill a glass that is already full. So if it's already full, you can't use it. So we have this emptiness and this experience. And it seems that we have these two poles. But now we have this emptiness is not other than form. It says that these two poles are not two poles. They're one and the same. In other words, this opposition that we thought was there isn't what it seems. And as someone said earlier, when you allow experience and the no-thingness of experience just to be there, then all kinds of possibilities open up. Don't have to make things one way or the other. Okay. So that seems like a really good place to stop, doesn't it? But Avalokiteshvara doesn't shut up at this point. He says, form is not other than emptiness. Now what happens? What's your experience when you hear those lines? Well, my sense is that something in you goes tilt. It's just like, what? Or, huh? Anybody have that experience? Yeah. And this is exactly what those lines are designed to do. They lead you through this process. Things are not what they seem. Okay, you can live with that. Emptiness is not what it seems. Well, that's good, because I didn't really like that anyway. Opposition is not what it seems. Okay, that's all right. Nothing is what is not what it seems. And now there is nothing left to stand on, nothing to hold on to. That's why I think these lines are so brilliant, because they leave you with absolutely nothing to hold on to. How is that for you? Yes?
Feels like I have no feet.
Exactly. No feet, no ground, nothing. Yes? Doorway that's dark on the other side. Okay, for you it's walking in. Don't even know if there's a floor. Yes, I've been in rooms like that. Anybody else? It kind of stops everything, doesn't it? And that's really the point of these lines. It doesn't matter whether you hear them for the first time or the thousandth time. They always stop the mind and open the possibility of just experiencing what's there, which is the point of practice.
Mind retains all rights to these podcasts. If you wish to use part or a whole podcast, please send an email to podcasts@unfetteredmind.org.